Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Gary Hines.
Hair Radio
show on Blog Talk Radio. He's the host with the most, Mr. Gary Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carafe Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo Events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
women, it seems like we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders. And that weight is directly balanced between your 2 feet. And with this balancing act, who do you think is suffering? It's not the kids. It's your feet. While running errands, paying bills, or dodging traffic, you could be ruining your feet. Wearing the wrong shoes for the wrong period of time can cause more damage than you think. Hammer toe and bunions are the leading deformities in black women. And Dr. Yolanda Raglan is the first black and only female podiatrist with practices dedicated solely to the correction of these type of deformities. So let this black girl do some magic and fix your feet. For more information, visit fixyourfeet.com, providing medically necessary surgery with a cosmetic result.
I want to tell you all about HealInGo.com. They make all natural hair products with a focus on quality. Got to try their scalp stimulator that has 130 oils to promote hair growth. Go to HealInGo.com to see their complete line and listen out for their interview right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. That's HealInGo.com, HealInGo.com. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, we have a very, very special guest with us today. He's from the world of music. You know him well. The Hair Radio Morning Show would like to welcome the one and only Mr. Tony Terry. Good morning.
Hey,
good morning.
Hey, Terry.
Yeah.
How are you? How's it going?
Well, I'm doing great. It is awesome to have you on the show. We
My
finally got
here.
You here. Yes. Awesome. Well, listen, this music, your music, has touched so many folks. I'm raising my hand right now, folks out there. It has. It really has. It resonates with everybody. You've been, you know, you really put the time in, and you've had a remarkable career. So we're going to get into all of that. I'm going to find out what you're doing now. We want to know everything, Mr. Tony Terry.
Okay.
All right.
The unsung version.
There you go. And by the way, I've heard some of that, and I've watched a lot of this and done my little research and all that stuff, so we're ready. The
first thing
that that really jumps out at me, of course, everybody knows, you know, just one of your biggest hits, of course, was that amazing song With You.
Mm-hmm.
And but before we get there, I want to talk about the first album.
Okay.
Because you had some hits on there.
I did. You know, it was really interesting, my journey to even putting out a first album, because I was, let me give you the succinct version as tightly as I possibly can of what happened. So I had been in New York for a couple of years, and I had auditioned for the off-Broadway show Mom, I Want to Sing a few times and had gotten turned away. And the last time that I went, that I didn't want to go and didn't care if I was in the show at all at that point, of course, I made it.
Wow. And you were probably in the version I saw, too.
Yeah. I was in with Deatra Hicks was playing.
Yes.
Yeah, I was probably there. And,
wow.
And so I did that for a few years, and I was about to just kind of, you know, just go home, actually, back to D.C., and I had decided that enough, you know, it wasn't really going the way that I wanted it to, and I was going to go back to D.C. And so maybe a day or two before I was supposed to leave, one of my buddies was like, we're going to see this band. And he took me to the Danceteria, which I don't think is open in New York anymore. And there was the place was packed. And there was this band playing, and they were good. And, you know, I'm young and, you know, cocky probably. And I told him after the set, and he came to ask me, you know, what I thought of his band. And I told him, I thought they were great, except they were missing something. And that something was me. And so he was like, okay, here's your time to shine. So I started singing maybe a Luther Vandross song or something in this packed basement of this club. And this gentleman turned around, who I had never met before, but it turns out he was Ted Currier. And Ted's claim to fame was Atomic Dog that he had produced, and George Clinton stuff. And he was one of the first DJs, if not the first DJ, to do live dance mixes in New York at 92 KTU.
Of course, KTU.
Yeah, back in the day. And but I didn't know all of that at this time. And so he gave me his card and asked me to give him a call. And I held on to his card. I didn't go back to D.C. I held on to his card maybe a week or so, and I called him late at night. I just, you know, figured that he was a musician like me and he was probably going to be working. And so I called him, and he was excited to hear from me, like, what took so long for me to call him? And he invited me to come over to a session he was working on. And I was in East Orange at the time. So I had to catch the bus to the path to the subway to 42nd Street, and then walk up.
See, and I understand that, and most of the folks in New York, New Jersey area, we know what you mean, and especially if you're in Jersey.
Right. It was a bit of a journey.
Okay,
so I finally get there, and I walk into the studio, and Ted has Parliament Funkadelic in there working.
Wow.
And I'm starstruck, mesmerized. You know, I hadn't seen anything like that before. I was a huge fan, I still am, of their work. And but let me say this. I understood what funk music really came from. And I'm just going to leave it there.
All right. I kind of got that. Okay.
And so I met one of my boys there who actually, his name was Daryl Mull. Daryl Mull was a young musician at the time who was in the very first show that brought me from D.C. to the area, to New Brunswick, actually, Crossroads Theater, where we were doing Black Nativity. And after about 4 weeks in of rehearsal, this young man in the band came up to me and said, "I don't know about these other cats, but you are a star." And I never thought about that before. I never even considered, you know, I was a part of this crew that had came up to New Jersey from D.C., you know, in pursuit of our careers, in pursuit of our dreams. But to think that I was a star, I mean, I was in the ensemble, you know, so to be picked out by anybody probably at that age and recognize that, you know, something as big as being considered a star would be like, wow.
That's huge.
And something I had not even considered, even though I had been pursuing this thing of being an entertainer for a long time. Didn't never really think be a star. Just wanted to work.
Wow.
And so after the show was over, I started working with him, and we wrote my very first demo. It was called Don't Hold Back. And for he and I, and he shopped it to Ted Curry. I played it for Ted Curry. Ted thought it was a great record, and then that started it. So I came down to the studio, and he had Parliament in there, and he said, Daryl said, "Ted, if you put my boy in the booth, you'll fire all them jokers." You know, he's like typical New Yorkian kind of energy.
Yeah.
And so Ted was like, "Really? Well, let's see." And I'm thinking, really? Seriously, Daryl? And so he puts me in the booth, sure enough.
And you were ready.
And I was ready, and he did fire Parliament. And I did end up doing that project for the Boogie Boys on Capitol Records called Survival of the Freshest. And it was actually the first R&B album, I mean the first rap record that incorporated R&B hooks. It started that whole thing. And
that's amazing.
I mean, at the time, I didn't realize it was so amazing. And so while I was recording, Ted's wife says, "Tony," she spoke a lot like Michelet. "Tony, Tony."
Oh, okay. Yeah.
His real little mousy voice.
Yeah, Tony, no more lies. Tony. Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah, we know her well.
You know, really small voice, and she asked me to come in and sing for this group of people that were in one of the rooms. And I didn't think to be nervous. I was already in there recording. I didn't know who they were, so I didn't have a problem walking into the room and singing, you know, a song for them. And so I did, and it turns out that those people were management at Capitol Records, and they offered me a deal right away. Seven albums.
Holy cow. That's unheard of. That's astounding.
I know.
It kind of was unheard of then. I mean, seven.
It was unheard of then. And,
absolutely.
Which, again, I didn't know that I was auditioning. So I wasn't nervous. I wasn't anxious. I was warmed up. I was ready for this. And that's what happened. And so the gentleman who would be responsible for me in terms of A&R was fired soon after I was signed. And their intention was for me to delve into Nat King Cole's catalog and record and, you know, restructure or find some of these classics. And I was 19, 20, so I didn't
Because he was the main capital big-time artist.
But wasn't I was he? Ignorant yeah, he built Capitol Records.
Right, exactly.
And I was ignorant to that fact at that time.
Wow.
And I was just not interested in recording Nat King Cole's catalog. Now, in retrospect, I think that probably would have been a good idea to consider. I don't know what it would have been, but, you know, at least to give it a shot. But I wasn't really – I didn't think that I had enough – you know, I was like, Nat King Cole, come on, I was 19. So you can imagine, I just was not in the Nat King Cole frame of mind.
Well, listen, it took Natalie a while herself to record Nat King Cole, to tackle Nat King Cole's music, so I can understand that.
But now, you know, I can hear it. Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, men have named you. I can hear it.
Wow.
But then I couldn't. And so the guy was fired, and he was rehired at Epic.
Oh.
His name is Don Grierson, and he convinced Epic to buy my contract from Capitol before I even sang it, before I sang a note.
That is amazing.
It's like, wow, so all this money, all these, you know, is it really that much money? Did they really pay that much money to buy me from them in terms of my contract? Because when you say buy me, it kind of sounds a little weird. But
no, we get it. Wow.
Buy my contract, and yeah, so... When I was moved over to Epic, I was there with Michael Jackson, Luther Vandross, Tina Marie.
Wasn't that Sony, or didn't it become Sony or something?
Yeah, it was Sony Epic, and they also had Columbia at the time. They had Mariah Carey on the other side on the Columbia side.
Oh, my God.
So it was like, this guy, they have signed me, and then once they had me over there, they didn't know what to do. Like, well, okay, we got them now. Now what? And it turns out that the head of the A&R department at Epic was Johnny Gill's godfather. And all he talked about was Johnny Gill all day, every day. And so it was clear that I was not going to get his full attention.
You weren't going to be, right. Yeah.
And then we put out She's Fly, and it caught everybody by surprise. No one expected it. And there was like, okay, we see something, but not sure what yet. And then it was Lovey Dovey, and
She's Fly was a huge, like you said, a huge, huge hit. That's the top 10 hit.
It was, and but they still weren't convinced. The label wasn't convinced, and somebody's calling me. I should have had my phone on Do Not Disturb. I'll call them back. I will ignore them.
That's okay.
Anyway,
that's all
anyway,
right.
So. It just went on, you know, so we had three singles off of the first album. She's Fly, Lovey Dovey, actually four, and Forever Yours, which was the title cut.
Yes.
And then we had, I believe Young Love was on that first album as well.
And Lovey Dovey charted even higher than
it
She's
did.
Fly, so that's amazing.
It did,
yeah.
It did. Okay, so now it's time for the second album. And, and the first
But were you nervous, though? Because everybody always says about the sophomore thing, or what is it, the sophomore slump thing and this and that.
You know when they say ignorance is bliss. I didn't know anything about all of that. I did know it as it related to theater, because usually opening night is the adrenaline.
I never knew that it related to theater. That's amazing.
Usually the night after opening night is, they call it after opening night blues, because the second night is usually not nearly as good as the opening night. And then it picks
Thank
up.
You
the
educated
from there.
Me. Thank you. Oh, you really have, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why later.
Yeah. It's time to choose the first single from the second album, which was self-titled, was Head Over Heels. And it was time to choose the second single, and I had chosen With You. And the label didn't agree. They called me in for a meeting.
I can't believe they didn't agree. But
they did not
agree.
I mean, they were pretty. They were well, I wouldn't say forceful, but you know, they stood where they stood. They didn't think it was
they
a good idea,
adamant.
And I just wouldn't let it go. I was like, nope. I think it should be with you. And they couldn't. And in fact, I remember clearly hearing the president at the time of the label say, "Tone, only Stevie Wonder could get away with a song like this." I was like, yeah, okay, well, let's just see. And so they put it out. But I think that in an effort to teach me a lesson, they put out With You with, you know, back in the day, there was a whole setup. You know, there was a rollout for a single or an artist, you know, the whole setup thing, which did not happen for With You. And it was also
like the promotion that goes along with it when the record is released.
Didn't happen.
Yeah.
Didn't happen. And when they, you know, your promotion, your marketing team that actually services radio, which happens on usually one day a week, and if you can imagine back in the day, there were 40 or so major labels. So you have 40 reps from those labels going to, let's say, WBLS, and they probably have only 5 slots for new singles this week. But you got 40 people vying for those 5 slots. Okay. So my record was serviced to radio with no information on it.
It was a
blank label, which to me would have made it stand out even more, because you're getting a plain label, unmarked vinyl 12-inch single from Epic Records. What could that be? That you don't put anything on
it. It might have worked in your favor.
It
yeah,
did. I believe it did, because then With You started to live. It started without any support from them. There was not going to be a video. There was none of that. And then one day I happened to walk into my manager's office, and the phone was ringing, and maybe our receptionist had gone to the bathroom or something. I don't know. She wasn't there. And I answered the phone, and it was Anita Baker. She was looking for me. I didn't
Superstar
know Anita Baker
was calling herself.
Herself. She was like, "This is Anita Baker, and I'm looking for Tony Terry." And I'm thinking, get out. First of all, just couldn't possibly be Anita Baker.
Had you guys worked together or anything?
I did not know her.
Wow.
I had never met her before. I never even had a conversation with her before that moment.
Wow.
And I was a fan of hers, but you know,
of course,
I didn't know her.
Yeah.
So she called, and I honestly did not believe that I was speaking to Anita Baker. But I went along with it, okay?
Right,
But it would have made sense, because she was calling my office, and actually our receptionist would have taken the call, and then it probably would have gone to my managers, and then maybe gotten
it would have gone to a few folks, right?
Yeah. But I got the call. And
wow.
And then she was like, "Tony, this is Tony." I was like, "Yeah, this is Tony." And she said, I was awakened last night, one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard in my life. And I had done The Party Machine, which used to come on after the Arsenio Hall show.
I think I remember that.
Yeah. And she said, "What is going on?" And I was like, "Well, first of all, thank you for, you know, calling." I still wasn't sure, convinced that I was talking to Anita Baker, but I went on to tell her that, you know, I appreciated the phone call, and, you know, thank you for, you know, enjoying the music, and there was not going to be a video because the label didn't think it was a hit. And she was like, "What? Those people wouldn't know a hit if it hit them in the forehead." And she made another comment. I don't know if I should repeat it, but I'm going to say it because she said, "I'm on the label with Keith Washington, and Keith could not shine your shoes."
Okay, if you're out there listening, Keith, we still love you.
I love Keith. He's one of my boys. What Miss Wade
said to me.
And I thought, wow.
Absolutely.
"Why? I don't understand." And so, listen, Tony, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to send you $50,000, and I want you to shoot the video. I need to see a video. And I was like, "What?
Wow.
What am I supposed to, like, how do I pay you back? How do we do this? She's like, don't even worry about it. Just blow up. Just be the star that you are. Just be the star that you are. And, you know, and then this check came certified for $50,000. And she said she was going to call Blair Underwood because she wanted him to direct. Turns out With You was his directorial debut. And he was in it. And, It was. If you've seen the video, it's because
seen it. We've worn it out.
Because you know, yes. I call her my guardian angel. Because, and you know, what's really interesting. Because moving forward, 25 years, the Monique Show, which was being recorded here in Atlanta at the WB, I think it was, and I had been on as a guest and performed, and we had heard that Anita Baker was coming, and my mother-in-law is and was a huge fan, and of course so are we. So I contacted the show and told them I wanted to come back and, you know, be in the audience when she came, and they put us on the front row. And so she comes out and she sings her song, you know, and she's all into it. She got her eyes closed, and just at the end of the song she sings, "Sweet love, don't you ever go away," and she opens her eyes and we make eye contact, and she sees me, and I can see her recognize me. I saw that in her in her expression. And then they cut to commercial, and she calls Monique over, and they clearly are having a conversation that I would think was about me because they were looking at me. And you know, and so it comes back from the commercial break, and Monique says, you know, during the commercial break, Miss Baker told me this story about, you know, giving this brother here, this young man, Tony Terry, and she introduced me, you know, $50,000 to shoot the video for With You. And then she asked Miss Baker, "Why did you do that?" And she said, "I was being obedient to the spirit. I was compelled to do it." And I thought, wow.
I'm speechless. That's amazing.
I thought, wow. You know, to hear the spirit speak to you, and then you move because you felt like you didn't have a choice, you had to do it, or that you would be, you know, not, you know, disobeying, you know, whatever it was. She felt compelled to do so, and I was really moved by it. She never wanted anything back. She just wanted to honor what she was led to do. It was on her spirit to do so, and she did it. And I just thought that was really a powerful thing. And then, of course,
that was amazing. That's huge.
And then when With You began to, you know, live, and the video was out, and you know, started moving up the charts, and then of course the label was like, "Oh yeah, we knew this was a brilliant artist from the very beginning," you know. And then I'm looking at them like, "I know you didn't just say
that." That is funny.
And it was then that I learned, or quickly, about the politics, because at that point, even though they had zero interest in the record, I had to let them claim, you know, the responsibility
for
its success, because, you know, if I had made a big stink about it, then, you know, it's politics, and it's an ego-driven business, and, you know, okay, all right, y'all did it. I'm so glad I'm signed with Epic. Two thumbs up.
Well, that song, I'm just still blown away by the fact that they could not detect that. Well, how can you be an A&R or this or that or whatever it was, the music, you know, executive, and without, you know, just not having that little certain something? I mean, I don't understand that.
It didn't fit the song structure of the day.
Of what they had.
It was different. And, you know, the chorus didn't repeat the way choruses typically do on R&B records.
Right.
And I wasn't necessarily, while I was singing my face off, or at least I thought I was, it wasn't in a traditional R&B kind of way.
It wasn't formulaic, which is, you know, to them, you know,
I thought it was, you know, just not a good move to do, and then it turned out to be like it overshadowed
an amazing
everything.
Which has stood the test of time.
Yeah, I mean, people, when I sing songs like, you know, Lovey Dovey or She's Fly or Head Over Heels, people are like, "Oh, I forgot he sang that song."
Exactly.
You know?
But once you hear it, exactly.
Right. You know, wow. With You came in and just took over. Just, and then all of a sudden, I was a, you know, this balladeer.
I'm
a crooner.
That song, I could play it like literally a good 3 times in a row. I mean, I just love it so much. And just like all of our, you know, our listeners out there, this is something that's really huge. And, you know, I was watching, I think you did a piece with someone, and it just hit me because these songs really, when people say, and I know, you know, we get a chance to have a lot of wonderful artists like yourself to come on the show, but when we say that our lives are really shaped by your music, we really mean it.
You know,
that's really the truth.
And it's not something that I take for granted. I have been asked to sing at homegoing services. At
wow.
To sing right. With you. And I'd be like, well,
really?
It's a little bit weird.
Wow.
And then they would say, this was, you know, this was the song that I sang to my child when my child was a baby. And, you know, it was our favorite song. And so then I felt, then it gave it a whole
That's
different
true.
Kind of weight. And,
right.
You know, I know that honestly has nothing to do with me. I say to God be the glory because,
exactly.
You know, I recognize that to have the ability to affect people on an emotional
That's
level
right.
is
That's
spiritual.
Right.
And
that's right.
And that does not come from me. It comes through me. And I'm just grateful that I was gifted in such a way that I can affect people. And it's humbling. It's not something that swells me up with pride. It actually is humbling that, you know, that I have it and I'm grateful. And I always say to God be the glory.
Well, Tony, I have to say, just even in you telling the story, I was like, no, I'm thinking to myself, I would have been so upset, you know, just the fact that we might not have heard that record. Like, that is enough to just, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to get over that.
Yeah.
But that really tells you a lot, you know, so... Folks, if you're just joining us, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the All New Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, today we have a very special guest with us today. As you know, we always bring you the very latest with some of the amazing artists that are out there. And today absolutely is no exception. Mr. Tony Terry is with us, and we are just so pleased. Good morning again, Tony, and again, welcome to the show.
Again, thank you for having me, Carrie. I love
yes.
it.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
it's really
I
refreshing
to.
When it's refreshing when interviewers kind of know how to interview because you know you have not asked one typical question yet, and I like that.
Oh, you're very kind. Well, I appreciate that. You know, I really do. I have to tell you, and just even kind of going back a little bit, one of the things that kind of got to me a little bit, I saw something where you had indicated that, like, when you kind of were starting out. And you were working, I used to work, like, I'm from, you know, Jersey and Philly and New York and Jersey and all that stuff. So I was aware of the summer youth employment folks. In fact, they still owe me a certificate award to this day. But I remember them, and I heard something, and you had worked for them as well, which kind of was your unofficial paying start in the industry.
Yeah,
and I just love that story so much.
Yeah,
so please tell us a little bit more about that because that's how you got started.
It is. You know, I was one day watching television and this super exciting show came on called Fame about a high school of performing arts. And, you know, there were artists, there were dancers dancing in the hallway. There were musicians practicing, you know, on the lawn outside. There were actors working on scenes. There were visual artists painting on the walls inside the school. And there were singers, you know, having voice lessons. And I thought, wow, you can do that in school? And it took a minute to process. And then I found out that there was a school like that in D.C., the Duke Ellington School
wow.
of the Arts.
Amazing.
And I the first year I asked my mom could I audition because we didn't live in D.C. We lived in Maryland, in Landover, Maryland. And it would have meant a commute. In the first year, I asked my mother, and she said, no.
Oh, my.
I mean, wow. Unequivocally, no. but what? No. Okay. Because I said so. It was one of those. And and so I didn't. But the next year, I went and auditioned, and I was so green. I had never auditioned before for anything. And I didn't know how to audition. And I thought that I would take a record with me. And I had an album of Jeffrey Osborne.
Oh.
And I was going to sing along with it. That was going to be my audition. That's how green I was.
Wow.
No one told me how to audition for anything. So I go into Duke Ellington and for my audition, and I say, okay, where's the record player? They were like, that's not how we do it. And so I was like, well, how do you do it?
Wow.
And so they asked me if I had a song prepared, and of course I did. And I sang it, and I just happened to sing it a cappella, and they let me in.
Well, I have to say that is amazing.
They let me in, and I was terribly excited, and then I told my mother I auditioned.
What did she say?
She actually, after I auditioned, I told her, I said, Mom, I'm going to Duke Ellington this year. And she said, oh, okay. Like, I probably said it with, you know, like, I'm sure I said it with so much confidence because I was already in.
Right.
And I knew that, you know, like, my parents had supported me my whole life. And they knew that it was, you know, that singing was a passion for me. And so she didn't resist. And I was surprised that she didn't resist. But it meant that I was going to have to stay with my aunt in D.C., where she welcomed me with open arms. With
that
her three other children in the hood, in the very seed of the scornful.
She
didn't lose any one of us. Nobody ever went into the system. Nobody ever got in trouble. Nobody ever. So she became this iconic person in the hood because no one messed with her children because they respected her.
I love that. Well, I've got to tell you. Yo, Joe, you go ahead, please.
Yeah. So I went in. I got to Duke Ellington, and it was the best time. It was the time that I learned. You know, we had a longer than normal school day, and we would do academics during the day, and then we would focus on our particular arts in the afternoon. And you know, it was then that I learned about, you know, 8-hour rehearsals and longer, getting it until we get it right. We're going to do it until we get it right, and then the opportunity to audition for and do the street theater, which Mike Malone, one of the founders of the Duke Ellington School of the Arts, also ran by way of the D.C. Youth Employment Program under Marion Barry, who the city, if he was alive today,
mayor,
he could probably be mayor now if he was alive.
Yeah, didn't even circle back again after some issues and things?
He did.
Wow.
And when he passed away, it was, you know, they shut the city down just to honor him.
Yeah, that was huge. Yeah.
It was
huge.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Huge.
Yeah.
And so that was the start. And I mean, and then at the end of my, which I was able to do 2 years of before I cycled out in terms of my age, and Mike Malone, who was one of the founders of the Duke Ellington School, along with Peggy Cooper Kafritz, who were also professors at Howard University, he came to me and he put his hand on my shoulder. I will never forget. And he said, you're ready.
Wow.
You're ready. And you can go. You go to New York with my blessing because you're ready. And I thought, wow, I got Mike Malone's stamp of approval. I mean, that means I'm really ready. And
now let me tell you something. Let me tell you, Tony Terry, it is not easy to get even into the high schools. I myself, real quick, I'm going to just jump right on here to tell you. But no, I applied to the high school. They had just opened the Performing Arts High School in Philadelphia.
Right.
My audition, I was so nervous that I screwed it up. So I never got in. So I just, when I hear stories and folks like you and you know, and Jasmine Sullivan went to the one in Philadelphia. And so it just stays with me so very much. So I love, and I know exactly what you're talking about because I
yeah,
relate. But I love
by being green and not being ready and nervous.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, I was
the whole thing.
Staring at the clock on the back of the
amazing.
Room, at the wall, just trying to get through it, all of that.
Yeah, and I keep hearing Debbie Allen. What was that line? Right
sweat
here.
It starts here with sweat.
Really? Wow.
And then I found out that Fame, the TV show, while it was set in New York, was actually based on what was going on at Duke Ellington.
No, you're kidding me. I never knew
no,
that.
No, I'm not. Debbie Allen was a teacher at Duke Ellington School of the Arts.
Really?
Yeah.
Hold it. Is that right?
That's absolutely
100%,
yes.
That says it all. Full circle. That's amazing. I did see Leroy, the one that played Leroy, God rest his soul, he passed away, but I remember seeing him out in Los Angeles. I remember hanging out one day, I saw him out there. But
he was
talented all the way through.
And a live wire. A live wire.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you say, Tony Terry, to these folks, you know, to the youngsters who are coming up, and have you had a chance to work with the, you know, the upcoming talent?
Some, you know, actually, that's really, really a good question because I have mixed feelings about encouraging people to enter this business, especially young females, because it is an ego-driven business, and mostly men and women, especially young girls, are taken advantage of more so than not. And they will go as far as to get to the threshold of success and then nothing. And then they're left to pick up the pieces of their lives and move on and then pull it together and find something else to do when you realize that your dream of being a star is not going to happen. And it's heartbreaking, but it happens more than you could imagine. There was a young lady that was trending recently, that was shining a light on a lot of things in the music business, and I do not know her. Jaguar Wright.
Oh, okay.
But
we've changed her name.
A lot of the things that she said had some validity
it's
to
really,
them.
Wow,
it's really real, and.
And she tells it like it is. Let me just, for those of you who have not heard of her yet, and a lot of folks have, she really puts it on out there. But
straight no chaser.
Yeah,
straight
she
no
really. That's all I'm going to say. So, it's good to know that there's some credence to it, right?
Absolutely. I would not want to I would not want to release my 14, 15, 16-year-old daughter into the hands of, you know, anybody and not be there.
Well, you know, but can we say that back in the day, we just weren't aware of these things? You know, we just heard of an opportunity and you would have to think that you're almost, you know, I hate to say, but some of those, the parents, you know, they're getting all this money and stuff. They might have had...
Yeah.
Felt that they needed to turn a blind eye or whatever they call it, you know, it's just heartbreaking, the whole thing,
It is heartbreaking, and, you know, for years and years and years, that kind of thing has gone on, and it's, you know, no one has said anything, and not only the parents have turned a blind eye because they might get a check for $50,000, which might be way more than they even make in a year. You know, $50,000 to someone who has nothing is a lot of money. $50,000 to someone who has money is nothing.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
And so, you know,
so
money,
you were
money,
reluctant, you know.
I would be reluctant because, you know, I know that, like, a young female artist is really, 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 really tough. And I can't even stress it enough, you know, and I would suggest, you know, never ever to be in a room alone with men if you're by yourself. I would suggest never drinking in public because, you know, you don't know what somebody can slip into your drink. I would suggest never smoking in public if that's something that you like to do. Do it in the privacy of your own home, in your own space where you're safe. because people generally in this business are not so nice.
Wow. Well, you heard it right from Mr. Tony Terry, recording artist superstar. Wow.
And it's a hard pill to swallow because it's a business that I love. It's a business that I love and still have passion for it. And, you know, want to, I've been fortunate in that I've been able to continue working, but not for lack of working hard, because I put in my time, I put in my effort, and it's always about growing and improving and evolving, and never thinking that I know it all. And I'm willing to learn.
Well, you have the best disposition I've talked to in a long time when it comes to the music business, I have to tell you. Tony, I do want to ask you about one thing that entered my mind, and that is the acting part. Now, how did you kind of make that bridge across from the music over to the acting, and then kind of merging the two with maybe the, you know, like Mama, I Want to Sing and all that kind of stuff? How did that come about with the acting?
Well, it actually happened in reverse. It started with the acting. I mean, I grew up singing in church, but you know, I was trained in musical theater, and you know, acting and singing to combine
goes together. Right?
I didn't know that it was going to be the music that would catapult me into, you know, the hearts and minds of people. Because again, for me, it was just about having the opportunity to share. I always call it sharing, because it's sharing. It's sharing, with people, the music, the experience. And I just didn't know how it was going to happen. I never really thought about it. I just wanted to be ready for whatever it was. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. But what crosses my mind, see, back in the day, I remember quite often, if you came out as a singer, if that's where you kind of blew up from that, then, you know, I don't know whether it was the public thing or the executives or whatever, they wanted to only pitching up. That's all that you got to do was to, you know, to sing. Or if you start as an actor, then that was it, and they knew you, you know, you blew up, that was it. These
you couldn't be a singer if you're an actor.
You could not.
Right.
You could not.
Right. You couldn't be a gospel singer if you're an R&B singer.
Exactly. That was
and Aretha Franklin was just kind of like, you know, she just broke the mold because she decided that, you know, I'm a singer. I grew up in a church. You can't really tell me what I can't sing.
I don't know how they could ever tell Aretha anything. Aretha was Aretha.
Right.
She was Miss Aretha, let me tell you. But I'll tell you, I really, and it shocks me, because to me, artists are not usually one-trick pony type folks.
Right.
You know, a lot of folks who are so creative and so talented, they're talented across the spectrum usually.
Yeah.
And so so these days we get to see that a lot more.
Yes. Well, you know, I think that has a lot to do with, one, the whittling down of all of the major industry. You know, there's now probably now four major labels.
Right.
And pretty much everybody we know has a smartphone and a laptop. And you can get it done in your living room. Anybody can be a producer, if you will, or at least they think they can. Not understanding that, you know, the most successful ones are studied and they know what they're doing.
Absolutely.
It's not by chance. But, you know, people decide that they want to pluck away, and then sometimes they come up with some magic. Magic is happening. And with the internet, you have access to the world, just like any major label. And so it kind of levels the playing field in a whole lot of ways. I remember in the 80s, my manager telling me, Tone, it's going to be digital. I'm telling you, it's going to be digital.
Really?
And I'd be like, okay, Bob, I hear you, man, but you have to keep saying it like that.
Well, but that's amazing, though. Back in the 80s, they knew?
Yeah. He was like, you better be ready. Better get on board.
Wow.
Better get on board early.
Wow. So these days, because of that, a lot of, you know, way back when you had to shop, you know, demos and this and that to, you know, every label, you know, from here to L.A., nowadays, like you said, you could basically just kind of put yourself on out there.
Yeah, you can.
You know, across social
media.
About
money. You absolutely can. There have been many people that have succeeded just because they were on Instagram, or they just, you know, and their video went viral and or something. And you know, there are also artists. You know, the world is bigger than the United States. And that's what the internet brings to you. It brings you the entire world. I know of artists that have sold 100 million records, and we've never heard their record one time, not once.
That is amazing.
In America, but you know, they're living large, doing well, succeeding, and we know nothing about it. And there are lots of stories like that.
Wow, you are very inspirational. Folks, let me just bring everybody up to speed here. You know, thank you so much for being part of this, Mr. Tony Perry. You guys, we're listening to the one and only Mr. Tony Perry. He is a music superstar, and we are so honored. Now, I want to talk about your current project. I want to hear all about your new single, what's going on. Tell our listeners.
Right before COVID started, I signed a new recording deal, and it's been actually very stressful from that
Congratulations,
moment.
Congratulations, too,
well,
by the way.
Thank you. However, before I signed my record deal, I'm a recording artist, so I'm always recording. And so I recorded this song called Born to Love You. And I just kind of put it in the pile of other things that I recorded. I'm my own worst critic. So one of my brothers, he tells me all the time, he's like, Tone, man, Your worst work is better than a whole lot of people's best work. You got to stop being so hard on yourself. You got to really kind of like loosen up a little bit. But you know, I am a bit of a, I wouldn't say perfectionist, but you know, I want it to be right. I want it to feel right. And so I recorded Born to Love You and just kind of put it in the pile. And then I started addressing this new record deal that I had that had been presented to me, and I'm spending a lot of energy getting this record deal worked out, negotiating it. And in the meantime, I had asked one of my partners who owns the label if he thought this particular record was a hit. And he called me back within 30 seconds. He's like, man, not only is it a hit, but I got you, I want to put it out on my label. And
wow.
So on a handshake, I gave him, you know, a small percentage of the publishing. And he went running with it, and it turned into a hit record for me. And I was over here trying on one side, negotiating to the point of just absolute frustration. And on the other hand, I have a record over here that's taking off, and I didn't even realize it was happening because I wasn't paying attention.
This is unbelievable. That and I became Born to Love You.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
And so it turns out the record deal I walked away from and Born to Love You, I started putting all my energy in and then to the next situation that we're about to release two singles now with the same company, my brother Adrian Meeks at Song Source Music Group. I have two singles, one called Your Love Is All I Need, which is a very powerful ballad, and then another one that's kind of puts you in the mind frame of Marvin Gaye's Inner City Blues, Make You Want to Holler. And it's called Brighter Day. And it speaks about, you know, what's happening. And the chorus suggests that if they would just know your name, then I know that you would release us from these chains. So we talk about, you know, just recognizing who our source is and where the power of love comes from. And if we could as a collective do that, then a lot of the problems that we have could kind of absolve themselves.
That's right. That's right. But folks don't see so clearly as that, I don't think.
No. It's an idealist concept.
Yes. But a good one.
But at least, but when you plant the seed, though, you got to plant the seed.
Exactly.
For people to at least start thinking about it.
This is true.
And some people don't even understand that, you know, they might hear a song. Have you ever heard a song that you didn't like, and then you hear it so much that you start singing it?
Yes. Well, in the old days, especially,
Yeah, and so the seed is planted.
Right.
And then it starts to take root, and then before you know it, you're bobbing to that concept that you couldn't stand 2 weeks ago.
That's right. Or you hear it years later, and you love it then.
Right. Yeah.
Usually.
I have a specific situation that has happened. In 2001,
yeah.
I released an album, and the single that we had re-released, which has a weird title called Freaky Little Gay, we could not get arrested with that record. I mean, nobody was even interested in even hearing
wow.
it. And then I went back to D.C. years, 20 years later. I mean, it was 2020 now. We're talking about 2000. So this was just a couple of years ago when I went back. And I went to a club, and the band was playing my song.
That is
that
unreal.
That particular song. And I was like, well, how is it that y'all are playing this song? And he said, bruh, every band in town plays this song. What? How is that possible? How is that possible that every band in town plays this song? They're like, this song is so dope. I couldn't even believe it until I saw it for myself. So when I played City Winery in D.C., and I had prepared to perform the song. And when I did, the whole energy of the building shifted. I couldn't understand it. I'm like, well, when I put this record out back in 2000, y'all weren't interested. What happened? what happened?
Is that not something you see?
Yeah,
that's right.
It's amazing.
Or you listen with new ears later, or I don't even know if you can describe how, you know, what that
is. I don't, but I'll take it.
Exactly. Well, I'm loving it. Well, listen, I have to say, first of all, Tony, now, you have just been just doing some huge things. You've always done huge things. You've never fallen, like, in my opinion, fallen off and, you know, just forget all about music and all that. You stayed with it, and you really have, and just you have a legacy. And so this is amazing, and that's, you know, that's very moving. So I just want to thank you on my behalf and, you know, and all the listeners that we have out there just for what you're doing, you know, because we try to get you guys on. We love that you all are still, you know, very much in – you're still relevant. Let me just put it that way because that's the word everybody's using these days.
Yeah, you know, it's about, you know, when you say relevant and, you know, reinventing, along with signing the New Deal, I started doing – because soon after the COVID thing struck the country – and our calendars were cleared, I started needing something to do. And I started singing on my Facebook page. Initially I titled it Chilling at the House Just Like Everybody Else. Every Tuesday I was there, Chilling at the House Just Like Everybody Else. And then it turned into Tony Terry Tuesday. And since March, every Tuesday I go online at 9 o'clock on my fan page, and just for an hour, sometimes it goes 2 hours, just depending on how I feel, and just music, classics, Tony Terry songs, and it has become this thing that became way bigger than I even ever thought about it being. You know, one occasion we had 90,000 people watching live, and for
wow.
me that was huge.
That is huge.
Because when I first started, you know, I would have 100, 150 people, you know, for the first few weeks, and for it to grow into this thing that has, you know, become so important to the people that come in and check me out every Tuesday, it's just been amazing. So it started out as therapy for me and turned into something that was therapeutic for my fans, and they would call me inbox me and say, you know, I lost a relative today and your performance tonight is, you know, pulled me through it. And, you know, I mean, those kinds of things make it bigger than me. So even when I don't even feel like going on, I go on because I know that it's bigger than me and it's not about me, and that I'm being of service to in the little way that I can. Like the little drummer boy, all he had was his drums. That's all he had to offer. But what I have is my voice. And if it helps, and if it provides just a moment of a distraction, of comfort, then, you know, that's a blessing for me.
You are just one of the most grounded individuals I think we've chatted with in a very long time here on this show. I'm just blown away, Tony Terry. I really am. Very, very grounded. I'm taking that you have a great balance with home life and professional world, which is awesome. You know, you have to be, just to be so, just, I'm just the humility. It's great.
Well,
I'm just,
the people that I hang around with do not mind checking me.
They let you know if you get a big head.
and I don't mind checking them.
No, I love it. I love it. It works both ways.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I've always believed that friendship comes with responsibility. And because of that, I have a small network of friends that we hold each other accountable and we pour into each other. Otherwise, I can't imagine why we would be friends. Like if we're not bringing something of value to each other, at the end of the day, if my interaction with you does not make me better in some way, then I'm kind of wasting my time. And so therefore, I have to put you in the acquaintance pile, and the friendship pile, you know, has to, because friendship is a gift, not only from you, but from the other person that you receive it from. It's a gift, and that comes with something, that means something, and a lot of people take it for granted. So, you know, my grounding, I think, comes from, you know, my family. Like, my mom has no problem telling me to take the trash out and bust them suds in the kitchen. No problem at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when you have that, you know, you can't help but just
be. You can't help but be grounded.
it takes a lot of energy to keep an ego inflated. And I would just rather, it's easier to just, you know, be who I really am.
Now, I want to ask you about some shout-outs. I have to, of course, shout-out the amazing David Pick-Gonley for helping to make some connections. Just awesome. From, you guys know him, and he's been on our show from Surface. Now we know that you guys might be doing some things, and I'm not going to ask him just what or anything because it may not be ready yet or you may not be ready to talk about it. But are you able to give us a little, you know, a little bit of some of the details on it just yet, or you want to come back?
Pick asked me if I would sing some of their songs over for a project that he was doing. He was going to re-record his songs, but, you know, he's a flautist. And
yes.
he was intending to re-record the songs, and he asked me if I would sing the hook. And I did. And when we started laying them down, it just felt like, so I just said, you know, hey, let me take a pass at the lead. And when I did, he was like, you know, we have to, go ahead and record that, right?
That's it, exactly. Wow.
And we did, and it turned out to be the beginning of what would be Resurface. And that is me singing those great songs with Pick. And I'm just honored that he would have me, you know, to do them. I'm honored that he is, you know, wants me to do them, and they sound great. And so Shower Me With Your Love is the first song that we've done. It's finished. And then we're going to do
song.
Only You Can Make Me Happy.
All right.
Wow. Yeah, I'm really excited about that. And then we're also doing, where I'm going to feature Pick on my project, and I've never been interested in doing this before, is to re-cut with you.
Wow.
But I heard this absolutely brilliant production that Pick came up with for a relaunch of the song that made me say I have to do it. You know, I would just as soon leave well enough alone. There's no need to bother it. But this production says, let's get her done. And so we're going to do that.
Well, you heard it right here first on the Hair Radio Morning Show. So I'm so honored. I really am. And is there anyone that you would like to shout out to?
Well, I mean, you know, just my crew, you know, who have been loyal and helping keep things together. We've developed some really important things. We're taping a new show called Conversations with Kings, and which I'm super excited about. And it's not even a show. It's really a peek in that allows viewers to see men interact with each other in a way that we are not talking about necessarily cars, women, and sports, but life matters, matters of the heart, toxic masculinity. I mean, things that really matter that go beneath the surface that men generally don't talk about in an environment that is conducive for us all to feel comfortable and just have real conversations with each other. And we've already recorded an episode that is so powerful that I cannot wait for the world to see, because, you know, we have been conditioned not to share our feelings.
That's right.
We've been conditioned not to be emotional beings when we are as emotional being as our counterparts, as the women in our lives. But you know, we've been conditioned to believe that an expression of
especially
emotion
in our community
makes you soft.
Right.
And we don't understand that it really does take a big man to let the pain show. And it takes bigger man to let that pain go.
That's right. Wow.
Yeah. So we're shining the light on that. I'm very proud of it. And it's going to be coming very soon, maybe to a network near you. But, you know, we have been blessed with the opportunity to be a part of a new platform here called CLS TV, which is basically our own network. And,
really?
Yeah, and so which makes us responsible for the content that we supply, that we provide, and even that journey, that this venture, which is a new facet of my career, is very interesting. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we hope you'll come back and keep us informed right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're loving it.
I will, Carrie. I will, Carrie.
Amazing things. We just wish you nothing but big success. Big, 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 big success out there to continue on that huge journey that you have started so many years ago, and just done some amazing things. And we're really proud, and I'm just honored to get an opportunity to have you on my show. So
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. It's really been my pleasure. I see some food that just came in, so I'm going to have to cut you off
right
here.
That's all right. Tony Terry, thank you. I hear you. Listen, enjoy Tony Terry, you guys. No, a couple new singles out there, Born to Love You. Look for that. We'll be in touch. Thank you for being
with us. And some gospel songs out, too. We got some gospel music out there, too. Check it out.
Awesome. All right, folks.
Be well, Carrie. Thank you, man. Thank
you,
for having
likewise.
Me.
Keep it right here. We've got more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to go. Stay with us.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
Hi, I'm Carrie Hines. I want to shout out to superstar hairstylist, industry legend, and my friend, Troy Ballard, a.k.a. Smooth Black of Smooth Black Inc. He's a hair biz educator, entrepreneur, and yes, he's known for coloring, cutting, and complete hair care services for the whole family. And now, you can hear him right here on Wednesday mornings, live at 8:30 Eastern, all the way from Southern California. Now, he's sharing a few trade secrets and so much more right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Well, Madam C.J. Walker, most everyone has heard of her. And because when I'm in a crowd, let's say 1,000 people, and I ask, how many hear of Madam C.J. Walker? And hands go up everywhere. She's an incredible person. She fought against lynching. She gave money for fighting against lynching. She went to Washington, D.C. to help create legislation against lynching. She was a woman of great character who helped to develop entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs. And yet, the question I generally have in a situation like that is, okay, what well did she draw her water from? What shoulders did she stand on to become who she was? And so I bumped into Annie Malone. And hardly in that same crowd of 1,000 people, you might have 99% of the folks raising their hand about Annie Malone, about the manager Jay Walker, but then you might have three or four people saying they know who Annie Malone is.
Correct.
So I figured I'm going to make it part of my life mission is to help help people know about who Annie Malone is.
Yes.
Because she
Yes. Go ahead. Go right ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. She was.
Oh, no. She was an incredible person. She was actually, she trained up over 75,000 women entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
She trained Madam C.J. Walker in 1905, and Madam C.J. Walker became a Poro agent, because that was the name of her college, Poro College. She built this beautiful building in St. Louis, Missouri, four stories high. It looks. I have an original book that people can get off Amazon if they go to parocollege.com. And Poro College, it's just very simple. The word, first word is four letters. Poro, P as in Paul, O as in ocean, R as in Ralph, O as in ocean, Poro, like P-O-R-O, college.com. And they'll see this building, and then they'll also see a booklet that she published back in 1926. And a part of my Black History collection, yeah, I have an original one of those 1926 booklets. There's very few of them around. And when you open up the booklet, the first thing you start looking at is how incredible this building is. It's like it's straight. If I just showed you a picture of some of the rooms, you would swear it's out of Wall Street, New York. And this particular building was a building where she trained up, as I mentioned, over 75,000 women entrepreneurs who she gave cash awards to for saving accounts or home purchases. She gave a diamond ring to them after 5 years of service. Her philanthropy toward them and toward others was legendary. This building is just an incredible place that she created for this. She owned a whole city block in Chicago. She paid, imagine this, 1926 alone, she paid over $40,000 in taxes. Just think about that.
Amazing.
One of the first people in the entire state of Missouri to own a Rolls Royce. And
who was actually the very first self-made female African-American millionaire? Annie Malone, or was it, I mean, not that it, you know, is something we should, you know, compare on any level, but I'm just curious because I've always grown up thinking it was Madam C.J. Walker with all of her, you know, things and accomplishments.
Yeah, from all the research I've done, if I were a betting man, and I'm not a gambling man, but if I were, I'd bet the farm that Annie Malone was the first millionairess of African descent, female millionaires in the country.
And that's
just
what
based
I'm getting.
On the timing.
Why? How on this earth? I try to figure this out as well. How did? And I love Madam. I love both, and all the things that they
no
stand for.
They both are wonderful. Yes.
Absolutely.
And that's not even part of the discussion here.
Right. Exactly. But how on this earth did Madam C.J. Walker take all the things that she learned, which I'm sure was a wonderful tribute to Annie Malone, and seems that only America, it seems like we only remember or know of the accomplishments of the student as opposed to the teacher.
I think a lot of it had to do with Annie Malone. What happened is that she ended up getting married in, I think it was 1924-ish, right around there. And what happened is that after she got married, her husband, he was not a very good man. And he caused such incredible problems for her that I just shake my head. and felt that he was due so much more than and they ended up getting divorced, let me put it that way.
Wow.
And from that point on, what happened is her business became she was a very, if you look at her building and everything that she did, it was incredible, impeccable, you know, clean. It was orderly. It was, I mean, you could see the record system she had. My point being is that this was an incredible person. But once, after the wedding, then what happened is that he began to sabotage everything. And so, and she never recovered. Then the IRS got involved, and she never recovered from that at all. Here's a college that employed, in 1926, 175 people with franchise outlets in North America, South America, Africa, the Philippines. A wealthy, wealthy woman. And then at the end of her life, she pretty much dies destitute. And all that's left right now is the orphanage, the Annie Malone Orphanage, that was a facility on Good Avenue. I don't know if you remember the song Johnny Be Good by Chuck Berry.
Yes,
he
of course.
He grew up on Good Avenue, right around the corner. And that's why the spelling Johnny Be Good, G-O-O-D-E, in the song, it comes from that Good Avenue.
All the time, I thought it was just Johnny Be Good, G-O-O-D. So,
yeah, G-O-O-D-E. If you look it up on the internet, you'll see that's how it's spelled.
Wow.
And he later became a beautician under the Poro system. He graduated in 1952 because he thought the music thing wasn't going to work. And so he became a beautician. And, of course, his songs just took off. And, you know, he never went back to it. But
Right. Amazing.
Just like the eyes are the window to the soul, the scalp is the window to beautiful and luxurious hair. The way to obtain it is with Stimulating Roots. Stimulating Roots will exfoliate and detoxify your scalp, promoting healthy hair growth. Stimulating Roots has a system to detoxify and grow your hair. Their shampoo combines menthol, camphor, and pink grapefruit essential oil to improve blood circulation in the scalp. Their conditioner, that stimulates, moisturizes, and hydrates the hair. The regeneration oil, that contains essential oils that work together to promote hair growth while calming an itchy, dry, and irritated scalp. Open the window to beautiful and luxurious hair. Awaken the senses to your scalp with Stimulating Roots. This is available at StimulatingRoots.com. That's StimulatingRoots, R-U-T-Z.com.
Hey, business owners, BossItUp.biz comes to the Hair Radio Morning Show. You're going to love Shante and Mike each week as they will help you to add to your bottom line. On our live broadcast of the Hair Radio Morning Show, BossItUp.biz specializes in education and also professional development and so much more. So give your business the BossItUp.biz treatment. Go to BossItUp.biz for more information, and don't forget to catch them right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Broadcast Network. I'm Carrie Hines. And today we have another great guest with us. Her name is Ahava Felicidad. She's from the state of New Jersey. Ahava, I'd like to welcome you to Hair Radio.
Thank you, Carrie. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. Well, it's my pleasure to have you with us. And I want to jump right on in. Tell everyone about your salon and what you do.
Well, it's called the Ahava Felicidad Hair and Body, what I call a growing holistic hair organization, and it is headquartered in Upper Montclair, New Jersey at Studio Pure by Ahava Felicidad. So it's a cozy studio space located in the town where I actually grew up in, so I'm a native of Montclair. And what services are offered here range from consultations, which include regimens and product recommendations, hair practice and care, sharing hair stories and finding out more about growing back hair, from hair loss or breakage and just taking better care of hair. We also provide styling, so I do scalp hair and styling here at the studio as well. Mix and make natural products. Have some distributor products here that are all natural and organic for, you know, anyone who's just maybe new on the journey or they've been on the journey for a while and they want to take everything they do to the next level. I also offer classes, so technique classes and also certificate classes for professionals and for clients.
Now, what kinds of classes do you offer?
The classes that are offered range from classes like two-strand and three-strand twisting, cornrows classes. There's one particular class that is called the Soft Style Trio. It's a new class where clients can come in and learn how to do French rolls, make mini buns, what we call thin buns, and make pineapples in the hair, and that way they can care for their hair and do some styling in between sessions. There's also there are also classes on cylinders and microlinking, so braidless weaving techniques.
Tell us a little bit more about that, if you will.
Well, the class is on the class is on cylinders. That's really exciting because it is a technique that I find more so it's not talked about as often to cross over into working with kinky, curly, and wavy hair. It's a technique that you see most times just on done on straight hair or hair that is has been relaxed. So this class that we offer goes over how to work in natural hair and who you can provide cylinders for if their hair is not strong enough for braiding in a traditional weave with the weft and the person wants to get their scalp. They also want to have a look that lasts a little bit longer than maybe a traditional weave or a crochet would. And we talk about in the class and train on how to care for the hair, what types of cylinders or hair would be installed for the client, and go over how to care for the hair, as well as educate the clients on how to care for the hair.
Now, you have got to tell us, Ahava, how did you get started in this business, and you know, what inspired you so much to be so passionate about this?
I've been doing hair since I was a child, so I would say this goes back really far. We'll say middle school for the extension, but I actually started braiding my own hair around the age of 5.
Oh, my
now,
goodness.
Now, yeah, I've been doing hair for a long time. Then I started helping other people with their hair in middle school, and I would say I do have a cousin who put extensions in my hair, and I felt what she did, and then I just began doing this. Now, the passion came from a mentor that I have. And the mentor, my mentor, Dr. Brown, told me, well, you know, you love to do hair. This is what you do. You do this really well. You know, you watch me with a few clients and said, well, this is where you need to go. This is where you need to be. And I see that you're very happy when you do this because I am very happy when I'm working in hair. So around 2009, I started really doing more consultations. But I would say even all through undergrad, I did hair. And I assisted and gave recommendations on hair care even before I transitioned to natural. So hair is just inherently, it's just an innate thing in me. For anyone who's what I call a part of any type of collective, there'd be a collective group of artists. And I had a conversation with a client about this actually today when she said to me, well, when did you learn how to do three strands? Or when did you learn and how did you learn that? Did you see someone else do it? And I said, well, no, actually, one day I was working in hair and it just came to me to try three strands going in one direction. And then after that, I looked it up and saw that there were a few people doing this online. I went through all the ways that this technique can help with natural hair. And then I just continue to learn from there and let things come to me. And then I'll find out, oh, there's a few other people who may do this, but they're doing this on their own hair, not in practice to take care of others. So I actually will do this on my own hair and in practice to take care of others and help them to help to take care of themselves.
Wow. So you have to say that this is you really serving as an inspiration for others.
Yes, and I have been told that, but I've been an inspiration for many women going natural, an inspiration for naturals to do more with their natural hair. Because I have been told, well, this is amazing. You actually help us. You'll teach us, and you'll do our hair. Like, we never find anyone who does that because, everyone may not have that teacher in them. And I actually still have, the teacher in me where I want to share, and I want the legacy to carry on and to grow. And without sharing it, that won't happen.
I agree. Now, you did touch on this a little while ago, but I want to find a little bit more details about this because I honestly had never heard of the cornrow certification. Would you be kind enough to share with our listeners a little bit more detail about that? I think that would be great.
Yes. Okay. So I've just recently created a cornrow certification, class or actually program. So I have three levels of teaching how to cornrow. Now, of course, someone would already have an affinity for and some skills with braiding or creating cornrows. So most people who are coming to a certificate class of this nature or program already know how to braid, and then they're just looking to go to the next level. So I have a basic class, which would be called Natural Hair Newbie. In all of the programs, there's a natural, like an intro, which we call a novice, an intermediate, or an advanced. With this cornrow cert program, there's actually an intro where you're practicing cornrows and you're required to actually do cornrows going straight back in several different number of cornrows. Then in level two, we go over everything we went over in level one as far as care and styling and, how to co-wash the hair, things about caring for natural hair and transitioners. The next level of cornrows requires more intricacy. So we would do shapes and zigzags and crisscrossing and mandalas and things of that nature. The level above that's an advanced level that would be more for like couture and runway, where I love to work with copper and ribbon and hemp cord and satin cord, and so do others. And then they would learn how to install feathers, how to install ribbons, how to loop through on a crochet technique, satin cord to create accents in the hair. We also do threading with yarn or with thread, even silk thread, silk hair tinsel, like fun hands-on accessories that will go in the hair for the very artistic styles. So you get everything with the three-part cornrows class. So cornrows are something that aren't traditionally taught extensively in a beauty program. That's something that's inherent, cultural, it's spiritual, it's educational, it's emotional. The more you practice, the better you're going to get. So the CERT program allows the practice and the longevity, and also then me being right there to say, okay, this is, you're doing really well, and then anyone else who's on our team that's a cornrows expert would be able to help and promote and support these designs, and then you're tested on, the skills and then also the hair care knowledge.
Well, we have got to tell everyone how to find you.
Oh, definitely. It's so easy to find me. The number into the studio, there's a studio mobile. It's 973-619-2855. There's also a second line, which is a dedicated line for Team Natriotic. So that's team members who are patriots for, loyal to the natural hair movement and everything natural and chemical-free. And also for other services that we provide, including body wrapping. That number is 201-921-9894. You can also find myself and then any posts that I make or pages for Hava Felici Dyed Hair and Body at havafelici.wordpress.com. And that blog actually functions as a website. We have a Facebook page. The Facebook page has some great albums of some foundation clients. So clients who've been with me since the beginning of the journey, you'll find pictures of them in different albums, and it'll show before and afters. You can also find me on YouTube at Ahava Felicidad, the holistic hair healer. There are some fun YouTube videos on there. It's not
just
hair.
Yes, I watched one or two, yes.
Yeah, it's like a nice, well-rounded view of me and then other interactions with me and clients. And, of course, more videos to come and some things that may be like tutorials, but more of hair healing experience and getting to know me as a person.
Well, I have to say, from all that I'm learning, and you've done quite a bit. You've got quite a few things going on out there. But I love your commitment to those who are transitioning. And,
yes.
You know, it's, yes, please speak to that, because you're really able to. I think that, you know, especially for a lot of the women, that they'll be able to really relate, and they can relate. And I think that you really have walked so much and created such a path. And I just wanted you to speak to this art of transitioning and so forth.
The transitioning.
Yeah.
There are going to be women that are just not ready for the big chop. I call it it's called the big chop. I call it the leap of faith. When I actually cut my hair, I called it going turkey, and this was in the late 90s. Yeah, that's what we call it, going cold turkey. Like when you quit something, you go cold turkey.
Right.
And then natural movement began to blossom, and this big chop concept came in. So I feel like I was one of those naturals at the very beginning of this next influx of transitioning and going natural. Transitioners need assistance with everything. So what happens is, because the scalp is now detoxing from chemicals, a lot of women transitioning experience an extreme amount of itching and flaking. And that's coming from detoxing, and the body detoxing from now stopping the chemical relaxer.
Mm.
You need help with that, and you want to talk to someone, and they'll, of course, come to talk to me about what's happening, and I'll help them to get hydrated on structured water, also sugar scrubbing the scalp. Transitioners need to know their options on transitioning. So I will have the consult and say, okay, well, this is your hair texture and density, if I can see it. If they have about 3 inches, that's when we can really see more of the texture. One inch to 2 inches may not be enough. Most transitioners, it's really going to depend on their lifestyle. So if they like a particular hairstyle, we have to go over, well, what types of styles do you like? What types of styles do you need for work? And we have this conversation about texture, density, length, and if they can rod set to transition, if they can blow out and ceramic press to transition, if they can 2-strand flat twist or 3-strand flat twist to transition. They may be able to braid or crochet, which is my favorite technique, and I would say I'm a crochet queen. I love doing crochet because crochet is another way for transitioners to make a smooth transition when they want longer hair, or they just want this particular look that, you know, they may not be able to get with their natural hair right away, but then cornrows are placed as a foundation, and different hairs or fibers are looped under the cornrow and tied to create like a full head weave. This can also be done with partials. So we have the conversation about the journey. We go over the entire, you know, if you grow half an inch of hair in a month, in 2 months you're going to have an inch. In 6 months, you know, the average person grows, in 6 months the average person's going to have about 3 inches of hair, in a year, 6. So quantifying that and also giving quality to that experience helps naturals to connect with expectations, like managing an expectation of, well, how fast my hair is going to grow, and then what styling options I want to try. And then they get to just start having fun with that. And then we'll gradually trim ends. As the hair grows out, they can just trim. So some naturals, it may be 5 months. Others can transition 18 months or longer. It's so much based on their hair texture and density. Not as much the length, but texture and density are going to play a part in how long they can take the transition.
Well, they've got the perfect partner. If you've just joined
us,
you're listening to the radio show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, we've got with us Ahava Felicidad. Now, I love this, and your shop, again, is called, it's Studio Pure by Ahava Felicidad.
Yes, Studio Pure by Ahava Felicidad. And the buy comes from the experience. So there are different hair healing experiences that also take place at the studio. So that's the buy, because there are experiences that are being created here. Even some of the rod sets have names. There are classic deep treatments, and there are Renaissance deep treatments. Renaissance comes from my favorite time period in history, the Harlem Renaissance. Of course, then there's also the Renaissance period for classical music, and that's where the classical or classics came in. It's from my love of classical music. So I said, well, you know, what are my standards? My standards are classics. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have classic essentials. We have classic carrier oils. We have classic deeps. A classic deep will be a sugar scrub with an oil and a natural conditioner. A Renaissance deep will have three or more essential oils, and it's an aroma and aromatherapy experience, because I also do aromatherapy and essential oil therapies. And that's all a part of the Studio Pure experience. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Now, you it sounds that way. Now, I think we mentioned the name, but we didn't tell everybody again where it is, and I want to make sure they have your address and the phone number, however they need to come mm-hmm. out, because you make it sound so great.
Okay. Yes, it's great. Now, everything at the studio is an exclusive session, so everything that's here is by appointment or by what's called by reservation. So clients will call in to reserve. There's also the option to get a gift certificate, and then you get a gift certificate, and then you call in to reserve. So the studio mm-hmm. is located at 260 Bellevue Avenue in Upper Montclair. It's on the second floor inside the movie theater building. So I'm in a building with a historic building, actually, with the Bellevue Movie Theater. We're inside there. So you won't see it just from the street. You would have to call in, and then on the blog it tells you how to get in, where to park and everything when you're coming in for services. When there are open house events, those go out to the client list, and then they're also posted on the blog, places like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. It could also be announced in a YouTube video if there's going to be an open house. So I would like to one day soon to be able to offer like some open store hours to just come in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a space for natural artists. So there are walls, plenty of walls here for anyone who's in the natural community and also does art in order to expand us out culturally. Events like that can be hosted at the studio.
Wow. Sounds so creative, of course, obviously.
Yes.
Well, I tell you, you are just doing some dynamic things. Now, what's next for you? You've accomplished so much. What's next?
What's next for me? Okay, that's a great one. What's next for me would be to create another certificate program. Maybe do some television. That would be fun. Well, I love the certificate programs because I get to teach others how to improve their skills, advance their skills, and help more people. So that part is very important to me, is continuing on the creating the programs and then, of course, filling those programs so that more natural stylists have the concept, and it's the Ahaba Felicidad concept. So they're also being taught what I do. Mm-hmm. So if someone wants to learn more about essential oils, they can learn that. They can come in at different levels and decide, how far you want to go with what you're going to offer. And then it could also be someone who wants to join the team. And what's next will be another series in May, if not May, maybe June, of eHow videos. I also am an eHow presenter. So I'm a hair expert there, and I've just run a series of 10 titles on styling wavy curly hair. The next series will be on kinky hair, some with locks.
And how do they see those videos?
Those videos will be released in about 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
And they'll be released on they'll be released on eHow soon.
Okay. Sounds great to me. Well, listen, I have to tell you, you're just doing so many wonderful things, and we want to take a moment to really say thank you. You are a trailblazer.
Thank you.
You really are, and you're doing some good things. So, listen, from the Hair Radio Show, did you have anybody that you want to shout out to or mention?
I want to thank God. I want to thank God first, my family, and, of course, the makers of Dr. Brown's Healing Water, which has helped me further myself and continue to help me further myself on the journey and helping others with their hair and scalp care, their energy, keeping me in good health as a, well-rounded businesswoman, mother, entrepreneur, speaker, motivator. I would like to thank them. And thank you, of course, for the opportunity to interview.
Well, listen, it's really been my pleasure, and you keep doing what you're doing, okay?
Thank you.
We're not going to have it any other way.
We can't have it any other way, and it's terrific Tuesday.
Thank you. Well, Ahaba, thank you so much for being with us on the Hair Radio Show.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hines.
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Terry Hines.
Time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Gary Hines.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. It is Tuesday morning. It's May 18th of 2021, and it is my great honor. First, let me just say it's our show number 563, so we'll let that sink in just a little bit. Show number 563 today. Again, we're live on the air, and I'm bringing to the line. Now, this lady, she really doesn't need much of an introduction to any of you guys out there. You've heard the Fix Your Feet commercial throughout our broadcast every day right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. And this is the lady who is behind that extraordinary business, again, fixyourfeet.com. It is my honor to welcome again to the Hair Radio Morning Show the one and only, the irrepressible, Dr. Yolanda Raglan. I've given you quite a build-up this morning. Good morning, Dr. Raglan. Welcome back.
Hi, how are you?
Hold on, okay, there you go. We're coming to get you, Dr. Raglan. Good morning. Again, welcome to our live show. It's so nice. I mean, it's really been a while since we've had you on.
I know. It's, you know, I know that during these times, it has affected a lot of people adversely with the pandemic and everything. But but for some of us, it worked out, and I was one of those fortunate people that it worked out for me. So first of all, I just want to start off by just explaining to people why I'm on a show like Hair Radio. Well, I feel like if you're taking care, if you're taking care of your hair, you're definitely taking care of your feet. I feel like the ladies that, or the people that tune into your show, are people that want to be beautiful from head to toe. So some people might say, well, why is this foot doctor always, you know, being promoted on here or is on the show? And it's all about, I mean, even though your show focuses on hair, which I absolutely love and adore, I always said if I wasn't a doctor, I'd probably be a hairstylist to the stars. because like I said, when you like beauty, you want to look beautiful from head to toe. So that's why I'm on here. And getting back to what I was touching on earlier about just being blessed in general, was that a lot of ladies wanted my services, but they couldn't find the time, because sometimes you do have to take some time off, or some people just don't want other people in their business, so they don't want to have to explain why they have on two post-op surgical shoes on their feet. So they choose, they choose not to want to go into work with, with the post-op shoes on, so that they don't get the questions. And so when the pandemic happened, for me, what happened was that, like, a lot of ladies that were like, well, I have to wait, I have to see when it's a good time. They were like, anytime's a good time right now, because they were working from home, and, at most, they would lose the date of surgery and time of work, because the next day you could just pop back on the computer, and have your meetings with whomever you're having your meetings, and no one's none the wiser because it's your feet. Your feet are not appearing on the monitor of your of your computer.
Wow.
So, yes, that's one of the reasons why it's been so long since I've been back on here, because you guys just been coming out in droves.
Yes. It has really been quite amazing. And we've got a lot to get to. We're going to have Dr. Yolanda Raglan hang out with us for the hour. We're so excited to the end of today's broadcast. And so this is really a wonderful treat. Now, we've got a lot to talk about. I want to talk about fixyourfeet.com.
I want to talk about what you've been up to, and also Summer Foot Care. We are here, and we're having a big show, and I want to get it out, and I may have to do, I'm going to steal this from Wendy Williams, but it's where you just put it out right through the radio show. I have got, because we've got to catch up with Dr. Ragland when we can, and Dr. Ragland, we've got a big show coming to Atlantic City this August, and it's welcoming to all of our amazing listeners and fans of the Hair Radio Morning Show. It's called the Road to Healthy Hair Workshop, and it's not, as you kind of were pointing out a few minutes ago, you know, it's not just for hair people. It's for everybody. Hair radio is for community. It's about hair and beauty from the inside and outside and all that wonderful good stuff that you guys know. But yes, coming up this August, August 21st, 22nd, 23rd, at the Showboat Hotel in Atlantic City, New Jersey. It's from 10 to 6. It's for 3 days again. We're going to be talking about hair beauty. We're going to be outside for the most part. We actually have everybody covered, whether you're outside, inside, or virtual, you will be pleased. Now, on the outside, we've got two locations. One is kind of right alongside the building, the Showboat Hotel building. We have about 10,000 square feet outside, so it's really a lot of space. And then across from that, we have actual space on the boardwalk, on the literal boardwalk. So it's going to definitely be a lot of folks you'll be able to grab up and down with your message and all that wonderful good stuff. And Dr. Ragland, we want you to come out. Most of the folks, what everybody I'm getting, they're, you know what I mean? They're making a weekend of it, a getaway, because there's nothing like Atlantic City in August. You know, it's a beautiful beach there.
You're right, but so. Yeah, you're by the water, and I know that because it's on the 21st, correct?
Correct. It's that Saturday, Sunday, Monday. They may put you to work, Dr. Ragland, because you know at the beach with the toes.
Oh God!
They really, you may be working. Yes.
Well, I'm telling you, I am in my Maryland practice on the 21st of August, but I drive back up.
Oh, okay.
So I may actually think of, you know, I could work this out, you know.
I'm going to
look at the dates right now. I'd love to come by and just spread awareness about good foot health care, and like if you are feeling some kind of way about the way that your feet look, that there's definitely something that can be done. They are surgical procedures, but they can definitely improve not only your comfort level but the aesthetics of what your feet look like after you're finished. After I'm finished with you.
Wow. Well, that is just awesome and amazing, especially, like I said, everything is kind of tying in automatically. This time of the year, folks are concerned. Really, we're kind of concerned privately and secretly, kind of what you were saying earlier, you know, about our feet naturally. So this is something that, you know, and particularly where I know where women are, and the only reason I say this because they have the, you know, the open shoes, the open-toe shoes and things like that, and their feet are more exposed as far as guys. Well, though we are wearing sandals, I mean, don't folks still wear sandals?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's still the style
sandals,
out there.
definitely. People wear sandals, but a lot of women defer sandals because they're simply embarrassed to display their feet, or they're strategically buying sandals so it covers up the toes. You know what? And I'm in that lineup. I've got I have two toes that I'm not too happy with my fourth and my fifth toe, the pinky toe and the one that's right next to it. And I'm not a huge fan of wearing, like, I love thong type sandals, but I feel some kind of way about it because I'm supposed to be the queen of toes, and I got one toe that looks like a peanut and the other one that looks like a penguin.
What should they look like, Dr. Ragland?
I mean, really, they should be when you're standing, or when you're standing, or even when you're non-weight bearing, for that matter. They should kind of lie down flat and straight. They shouldn't be elevated. There shouldn't be a joint that's sticking up in the air. There shouldn't be there shouldn't be discoloration over the joint area. So some people have hyperpigmentation. Some people have hypopigmentation. And typically when you get to the stage where it is hypopigmented, that means that there is a callus or a corn on top of that joint, because that corn is serving as an armor for your skin so it doesn't break down and ulcerate. Because the lesser of the two evils, if you were going to ask for one of the two evils, an ulcer or a corn, I'm telling you, ask for the corn. Okay, because the skin is closed, it's protected. If you have an ulcer, that means you have an open wound, and your tendons and your bones are very close underneath that skin, and getting infections there, it's like the one thing you don't want. So the corn forms to protect it, to protect the skin. And it's also happening because the joints are bending. Your toes are supposed to bend during when you walk or during gait. But some people's toes stay contracted for too long. And when it stays contracted for too long, contained inside of a shoe, the skin becomes offended by the shoe. And so that, like I said, the body's natural response is to protect itself. First, on black skin, it will probably get hyperpigmented. So that means those are what I would call it precorns. And then if it gets too traumatized, some ladies will go and treat their precorns with salicylic acid. And salicylic acid is just that, it's acid. It cannot differentiate good skin from bad skin. And really, you should only be applying salicylic acid on calluses and corns because they're hard. Okay, but a lot of ladies will go and say, well, I don't want to get the corn. So they go get the salicylic acid, they put it on their pre-corn, and now you've burnt the skin, and the skin's like, hold up, we can't take this. So what does it do? It forms the armor. So you went from having a pre-corn that was just hyperpigmented to having a full-out corn, which is hypopigmented, it's hard as dark, and it does not revert back unless you stop the function that is causing it, and that's the bending at the toes.
Oh, my. Wow. Well, this is just very, very interesting. Folks, let me just bring everybody up to speed. If you have just tuned in, you're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. My very special guest on this live broadcast on this Tuesday morning is Dr. Yolanda Ragland. Now, Dr. Ragland, you are a podiatrist, you are a foot surgeon, you have a couple of locations. Can we just tell everybody a little bit about where you're located and how they can reach out if they wish?
Oh, yes. So, again, I'm Dr. Yolanda Ragland. I'm the owner, founder, and CEO of Fix Your Feet. And my website, of course, is called fixyourfeet.com. You can definitely find me on Instagram under Fix Your Feet. You can find me on Facebook under Fix Your Feet. And I believe I'm also on TikTok under Fix Your Feet. And if you don't find that, then you look for Dr. Yolanda Ragland. But if you forget my name, you're not going to forget Fix Your Feet. That's for sure. So you look up Fix Your Feet, that's me.
I have to say, Dr. Ragland, everybody loves your commercial.
Wait until you get my jingle. Yes. You're going to love the jingle when we get it. So,
I can't wait. So the
location, my primary location is in Manhattan, New York, on Park Avenue. So, I'm in the Carnegie Hill area of Park Avenue. So those that aren't familiar with the different small segments of New York City, Carnegie Hill area of Park Avenue is like Doctor's Row. This is, if you're on your game, you're in this area. And I'm the only person that looks like me on this Doctor's Row. I also have a satellite practice in Bowie, Maryland, And I go to that location, yes, Bowie, Maryland. I go there once a month. I only see patients for consultations and follow-ups. All procedures are performed in New York City.
In New York. All right. In NYC. No, I love what you say. And I have to think about it because I know to be honest, when I first thought about a podiatrist, I don't always get the image, and I would love to get that image of the African-American woman, as that doctor doing these types of things that you're so connected with. And, you know, so what I'm trying to say is that we don't often see black women in that role, or is it just my thinking? So I think this is extraordinary.
You are definitely, you're spot on, Carrie. Let me tell you something. I operate out of private surgery centers, and I do that because there's a different level of service. They cater to the doctors a little bit better. What the materials that I want, they will get whatever I need. If I go to like a big hospital system, they may say, no, you can only use this product or this product. No, I'm going to use the product that I think is going to yield the best result, not what they want me to use because they got a good price on it. So working out, but I've operated out of big hospital systems, but mostly out of private surgical centers. And I'm telling you, even in doing that, I don't see other black people, especially women, and if I do see them in the OR, they're either an anesthesiologist, which there's nothing wrong with that, or they're in OBGYN.
Right.
But as for somebody who's actually like getting it in and doing surgical procedures, just me being a DPM, so I'm a doctor of podiatric medicine as opposed to a medical doctor. I mean, like, if you understand what sort of great feat that is that I have made in order to align myself in the locations that I'm in, allowing my being able to provide the type of services that I can provide to this broad group of people that deserve this sort of
That's
service.
Right. That's
so
right.
It's the reason why I started it in the first darn place. I had medical issues. I felt like at a very young age, I felt like that I was not heard. I felt like I was being dismissed. And I said, I need to go to medical school to find out what these people know. And what I found out was my instinct was right on. I was being dismissed.
Wow.
I was being ignored. I was not getting the same level of treatment as my majority cohort. And I found out that doctors really don't know that much. Most of them don't know that much. There's few
That's
and far
right.
between, and you got to find the ones that do know that much, and you got to find somebody who's colorblind.
Oh, wow.
It's a real thing. Anytime you have I call her, she's kind of like my girlfriend. We're girlfriends in our heads together. And anytime she's around, she's in my same age group, and I did a procedure on her in the office because she wasn't able to go to the surgery center due to insurances, so we saved her some money by doing it in the office. And so what I do is I have to give people a local anesthesia, which means I have to inject their foot. And you're going to feel that first, but that's to numb you up so you don't feel anything. But I've had a needle in my foot, and I'm telling you, it's not a pleasant experience. So what I do for my patients is I prescribe them something to take that edge off, to take that anxiety off, and to make it so that they're in a more comfortable place. So you're not sedated. There's no IV going in your arms, but it's a tablet just to take that edge off. And she said to me, she goes, you know what? She's like, they don't give us this. You know, the regular doctors don't give stuff like this to us. And she went on to tell me about how, and like I said, she's a mature woman, so we had kids, you know, in our, you know, like the 40s. And she had a kid around the same age as mine. Right. And she said she had like this, that, you know, the emergency C-section, whatever. And all they gave her was ibuprofen.
Ooh.
That sounds, and I'm a guy, and that sounds painful to begin with.
Can you? I had an elective C-section, and I'm like, if I didn't get more than that, there's no way I would have made it. I wouldn't have made it through.
Wow.
And so, these are common stories. So even though I went into podiatry and it focuses on the foot, I realized, and I think that this has to do with any medical specialty. I think that if there are other black doctors out there listening to me, trust me, whatever you're specializing in, patients are looking for you. We're looking for you to give us a different level of service. We want to be heard, and we want good and proper treatment,
everybody
else.
I'm just loving that, folks. Yes, well, I love that these women particularly can see themselves in you and vice versa. So that is so unique sounding to me, and it sounds wonderful. It really does. So thank you so much for your service and what you've been doing. Dr. Yolanda Raglan, we've got a lot to get to this morning on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We've got Dr. Raglan with us hanging out for until the end of the show, we're going to say, today. And I just want to also go back, while we're giving thanks to everybody and all the folks who support us, I want to welcome, along with FixYourFeet.com, just our amazing supporters who help to bring this episode to air. And every day, right here, our show, you know, we have the morning from 6 in the morning, 9 to 9 o'clock, I should say, Eastern Time daily, of course, weekdays. And then, of course, we have our separate podcast. Folks, again, like FixYourFeet.com, are amazing. I wanted to take a moment to also acknowledge Rugged Evolution. You guys have been with us for a long time. StimulatingRoots.com also. Tracy Beauty Supply, Heal and Go, Smooth Black, Boss It Up. You've been listening to a lot of these amazing commercials air even today right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. And again, we're so happy to welcome. You're in great company. Dr. Raglan, thanks so much again for being with us and being up early on our show. I know you're up early every day with what you're doing.
But anytime I can support a business like yours, I'm definitely here for you.
Well, listen, what I love about when you come to the show, we talk about foot care, which is wonderful. And again, it's summer foot care, big thing right now going on, so I'm going to kind of bug you a lot throughout this show on that for our listeners. But I also want to talk about one of the things we also get into quite a bit of, which is entrepreneurship. Now, I have to honestly say, I think everybody who knows me knows that I am one of the biggest advocates for entrepreneurship. I love entrepreneurs. It's just a part of my DNA. But also I think because of just, you know, and kind of walking that long road, at least initially by yourself. So I so relate to entrepreneurs, and I want to do everything I can to help folks to become entrepreneurs, those who are already trying to get things going. You know, I'm just a big supporter like you are. So I want to say that you're one of the only folks I know who's really huge on this. I mean, you know, to my degree or more. So you know, it means a lot to you. So I love that you talk a lot about it. Why does it mean so much to you?
It means so much to me because I feel like it's kind of like the memo that a lot of us don't get. We, you know, especially as Generation Xers, our parents kind of like trained us to, you know, you get a good job, you know, with your benefits, and then you get a pension, and then you retire.
You don't go work at the post office.
Right. And then what happened was that we were just making lateral movements. So we weren't creating generational wealth. Well, the way to create generational wealth is not by actually working for someone. And when I say working for someone, not working for a job where there's a pension and, you know, things like that, because you can still be working for someone and still be working for yourself. And that's where I think that a lot of people don't understand that you got to get out of the mindset. You need to understand that almost anything that you do, in almost any job that's out there, if you think about it, there is a way that you can switch your mindset into, I'm not working for this company. I'm using this as a stepping stone so I can move forward and do something a little different. And I'm going to learn as much as I can from this company, you know, whether it be good or bad, so that you can make that next step. So I'll give you an analogy. In my younger years, I used to work in department stores on a commission basis. And I worked in the accessories department selling pantyhose. And I made commission. And what they told you, and this is one of the great things about this one retail shop, at least at the time when they trained you, they were like, this is really your own boutique. And they gave you a little black book, and you could get your clients. And I took that very seriously, whereas everybody else took their black books and they never used them. Well, I learned that there were plus-size women, because back in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s, we had to wear pantyhose. I don't know if you millennials know that, but you couldn't go to work without pantyhose. Hell, you couldn't even wear open-toe shoes. But So we had to wear pantyhose, and pantyhose was a thing, and they came with a girdle on top. They came with control tops. They came all these different varieties. Different colors, sheer, ultra sheer, and I'm going through all this to let it, there's a whole, you know, vivid story around this. So the plus ladies would come into this, and this was a high-end department store, looking for their hosiery, and they couldn't find any because it would all be sold out. And I figured out that they only replenished the plus-size pantyhose when there were sales. So once I figured this out, when my Zoptic ladies would come in and look, they're like, I can't get a black, I can't get a nude, I can't get this. I said, listen here. I said, give me your name, give me your phone number. It's like, I said, they only replenish when the sale comes. It's 15% off if you buy 6, it's 20% off if you buy 12. I said, I'll call you, I'll let you know, I'll pack the boxes, I'll mix up the colors for you. Okay, I'll mix it up. I said, you don't have to get one box of one color. I'll mix it up for you. You'll get that 15 or 20% off depending on how many you decide, and I'll send it to you for free because they taught me about they used to do this charge send, and back then this was not a thing. You have to remember, this was late 80s, early 90s. When sale day came, I had already made what somebody would take all day to ring up in the morning because I would call my curvy ladies up and be like, okay, Miss Finkelstein, okay, Miss Rogers, okay, Miss Johnson is here. What do you want? And they'd be like, oh, Yolanda, you're so wonderful. And I and send it right.
They
didn't have
you.
To come into the store.
Yes.
They loved it. So I just want you guys to think of how I took something as what, you know, people snub their noses at people that work retail. I was making commission. So I got a piece of everything that I sold. Okay. So
you're very smart, though, Dr. Ragland. That's the thing. Not everybody or can everybody be that creative? Because you're creative. You're very, very sharp and very creative. And that has a lot to do with entrepreneurship and figuring and navigating your way. I always wondered, can anybody be an entrepreneur?
I was only 18, 19 when I was working in that
place.
I was very young.
Wow.
It wasn't like I was some seasoned grown woman. my brain hadn't even finished developing as far as science is concerned.
I think you were born to be an entrepreneur. I do. I think that tells me, because that is amazing. But Dr. Ragland, I hate to tell you, but that story reminds me of almost the exact same story that I have. And I'm starting to wonder about this because I remember working in the airlines And I was working, I'm going to just say, at the airport at LaGuardia. I'm not going to give anything more beyond that because I don't want the airline coming after me. But I remember working at the airport and working for one of these airlines. And I had, I was a supervisor at the time. And the general manager, she was over me, and she was really, really nice lady. And they said that pets could travel on board the aircraft. Okay, this was new for them at that time. This is going back a little bit. So at that time, they were not allowing pets in cabin, but they started allowing people to bring their pet in cabin and putting under the seat and that kind of thing. So like you had a little tiny dog or something like that. And what was so amazing is that the airline, they just came out with the rule, okay, well, today we're accepting pets in cabin from now on. But when the customers would show up, the passengers would show up, they didn't have the proper receptacle. So the FAA and all these folks had a very specific guidelines in terms of what the pet had to be and what kind of receptacle to go under the seat. So that was something, and you know how a lot of these companies, they don't bother to think about the effects of what they say. They just tell you blah, 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 and the company, everybody has to fall in line. So I took the general manager aside. I'll never forget this. And I knew, I said, listen, I researched it, and I found the proper receptacle. And I said, listen, I'm not going to say her name, but I said, I told her, I said, I'll order these receptacles under my business. I always have businesses going on. So I said, I'll order this separately under my business. I won't tell anybody, all the other employees, because they would have a cow. And she literally would order all the receptacles for the traveling public who came through that airport from my business. She allowed me to, even though that was a little bit of a, not a conflict, but it was because I worked for the company. So I guess it was a little bit of a conflict. But she did it for me.
It doesn't matter.
Something?
That's beautiful. But that's how. But how do you think?
I made a small fortune.
And that's what I'm saying. And that's what you should.
That's exactly
what
it reminds me of.
I love that story. I love that
really
story
the truth.
Because
yes.
How many other people are in the same sort of predicament? It could be something as simple as you know, cleaning a hotel room, and you might come up with a concept that, hey, you know, maybe if we do this a different kind of way, you know, or if we use this, this would be more efficient in us getting the rooms turned over. I mean, it's not you always have to stay on point. And if that person doesn't listen to you, then you got to take it to somebody else who is going to listen to you.
You know what? You hit it on the head, and that is so very, very important. And that's kind of true because being able to speak and get to, I mean, it may take you a moment or two to finally get to the right person. But, boy, once you get their ear, watch out, world. And that's exactly what happened.
Don't be discouraged.
Don't be afraid. Right?
Don't be afraid. The worst they can say is no. And if they say no, perhaps you need to figure out, well, how was my pitch? How was my delivery? How do I make this more tantalizing? Then you start talking to other people. There are always people in your general circle, whether you're tight with them or not. It doesn't matter if you're tight. If you come up to somebody, a business person, if you're like, I respect what you do, let me ask you some advice. This is what I said. Why do you think they didn't hear me? Now, when this person responds to you, you can't get on in all of your feelings about it. You need to take what they say, digest it. and figure out a way to make it work for you. Yeah, you have to digest, Hans. It's hard for us to take constructive criticism.
It's hard for people to take criticism in general, and then, you know, and kind of, maybe it's because we can't differentiate what's constructive or non-constructive. Is that something? I mean, why is it so hard for us to take when somebody criticizes us?
I don't like the word criticized by stuff. I'm talking about constructive criticism. So this is somebody, they're like, okay, this is what you did. This is, you know, you're hearing, all you're hearing is this is what you did wrong. And what you're not, and what you're not getting out of the message is, this is how you do it right. This is, that's what you're not getting out of the message. All you, you step on, oh, you just saying I'm doing it wrong, I'm doing it wrong. No, they're saying this is where you went wrong, and let me tell you how, you know, I might have listened to you more if you had said this instead of saying that. So instead of getting caught up in your feelings about the criticism, listen to the advice that you're getting behind
exactly.
it. That's another thing. You know, you have to listen to the advice. Oh, shucks. Anyway, sorry. And then the other thing I want to point out is, you know, it's always good to have oral and verbal discussions because we're in this age of technology where we're texting and we're emailing. And I always tell people, things get lost in translation in text.
Yes.
Okay, because people, we as humans, it's a scientific fact, we as humans will read any message given to us by anybody in the most negative way. Okay, even
yes,
if it wasn't,
I agree.
Even if that person did not, even if that person had, there's no intention in it, but we will read it. That's our natural, it's something in us, I don't know what it is, but I have learned to condition myself to be like, you know what, I'm not going to get all in my feelings about this message because I can't hear what this person is saying and I can't, their body language. So I'm losing two other valuable components that could let me translate this message in a more positive way. And when it's just flat
well,
out
well,
written,
I always
like
say
I said,
that,
you,
that you definitely, you're absolutely right, Dr. Ragland. I got to tell you, because that is so critical, what you just said. And I remember, I always had the rule of thumb early on when this texting stuff started kind of happening. And I said that you cannot understand the tone. That's what it is. The tone of what their message is missing. You can't figure out the tone. And what I realized early on is that whatever mood I was in is the tone that I created in my head for it. So you might have just been saying that, you know, it's sunny outside. And if I was upset because of something else, when I read your message, I'm like, who does she think she is? What is she talking about? And it all, it's the mood that I'm already in is how I'm going to interpret the tone of your message,
yes.
which is not,
yes.
which is totally can be lost. And I think that's what you're kind of saying too. And so I have a rule of thumb. And I still have that rule of thumb even today after all these years since texting started. But that rule of thumb is I never, if I'm upset with you or anybody, I will not send a text message. If I'm upset or, you know, we kind of got into it,
brilliant.
We don't agree about something, I don't text. That is a rule of thumb.
No, you have to talk.
I do not text.
Yeah.
You got to talk because that message, if you got that message, you will not like that message. So
yeah.
I don't do those types of things. You know, does that make sense?
And like I said, yeah, it makes complete sense. And these are really, you know, we're talking about being entrepreneurs, and these are things that are really, really important. These are little hacks, as a matter of fact, that we don't understand.
Yes.
I feel like a lot of us, especially a lot of us that are going into this community, we get in our feelings about stuff, and then we wind up burning bridges that we shouldn't be burning.
Yes, that you feel sorry about later on. Because after you send these horrible messages, you'll think back and say, ooh, I didn't mean to say that. And then it's too late.
Yeah. Yeah, yes.
Wow.
And like I said, sometimes a message is read as being a horrible message, and it wasn't a horrible message. If the person had just called you, listen, if I get a text message in paragraphs or even by email, I might read the first line, the last line, and skim through the middle, kind of like get the gist. Okay, yeah, this is what they talked about. And then what I do is I get on the phone. So I hear you have something to talk to me about. And then like, oh, did you see my message? I'm like, I saw it, but I didn't read it. And I'm my candor is plain and simple.
Oh, you are about as candid as we can get.
Yeah.
We
saw,
say plain
I saw
spoke
it,
and the older folks.
I didn't read it because I'm spending too much time trying to figure out what you mean by this, because you could mean one thing or another. And I need to talk to you so we can be on the same page about what it is that, you know, what you're trying to explain to me. If you're upset at all, I don't know if you're upset, I don't know if you're happy or whatever, but once I get on, at least when I'm talking to you on the phone, at least I get an audible. And like I said, and then even face-to-face is even better because now you're looking at body language too.
Exactly. Well, these are clues. These are communication clues. Whose bright idea was it to dismiss two critically important aspects of the communication process? Which, again, is tone and being able to use these look and see somebody's facial expressions and all of that. All that plays a part into it. But when it comes to the texting and, you know, to me, this particular generation, the Generation Z kids out here, they totally are unaware of how critical the tone aspect. Because 100% of their communication is through texting or some kind of electronic process. And they don't even care about tone because they've never been exposed to the understanding
but
of the, you know, the nuances of tone and the importance of it.
I'm going to like give a little bit of credit to this new generation coming up because remember they're coming up in the age where, you know, where it's FaceTime and you can do a voice text and stuff like that. Which we in our generation, we might be a little bit slower on the take to do it,
right?
Because it's like,
that's another thing
we gotta learn how to do. So I do feel like the younger end of Generation Z is definitely I think they are bringing back, what we hear audibly and what we see visibly. I think they are bringing it, you know, bringing that back, which
it's
I think it's refreshing
cycle.
And it's So I think people do. I think they did realize that the text might not. It's good. I think texting is good for short messages. I need to speak to you. What time is a good time to talk? That's what texting is for.
And to be quite honest, that's exactly what it stands for. SMS stands for short message service.
Where have we lost in that?
That's exactly what it's about.
So it's really meant to say, you know, or urgent. You need to call me right now. You know, something like that. You know, that's what it's meant for. And I think that we need to get back to that. Start utilizing some of the newer applications that come along with the text applications so that we can convey our messages in a way that we really want it to be conveyed.
You embrace technology and all of that. I was just telling one of my customers yesterday, I said, listen, I so apologize. I said, you call me on the phone, and I said, I'm from the old school. This is how I explain it for you guys out there. I say, I'm from the old school. So what my phone, I remember my phone was something that was a device that was on the wall or in a different room.
This
is so true. So when I'm thinking about my cell phone, I don't think about my cell phone the same way that, you know, I remember having an intern who was, you know, from this generation Z we were just talking about, and their phone literally was in his fingers like it was an extension. My phone, I had to listen when it would ring and remember, where is it? Where is that sound coming from? Like, it's just out of sight. It's in another room. It's on the other, you know. Literally, you might as well think about it like one of those princess phones from the 70s or 80s or what have you. And I'm trying to get out of that mindset of, you know, treating my cell phone the way I did the old house phone. Does that make any sense? This makes me sound like a dinosaur.
They don't understand. I mean, like, they don't. It's the same way with I think that I love that analogy. I think it's great. And I don't think that you're alone. It will take you some
Thank
time.
You.
I mean, and the thing is, I don't know, like with women, at least it's easier for us because we are always carrying around a purse.
Yes. So we
always have a purse. So that does work to our advantage. So I do understand as a mature male who might not always have a man bag.
No, not at all.
Some guys always have the little page boy thing, or they do the backpack thing or whatever. A lot of people do that because men are starting to realize, yo, these women are onto something with having a purse with them all the time because you need to carry your things in it. But I also equate that to when people get upset that you don't return a message as fast as you like them. Then when I was growing up, there was no answer machines. Okay, so if you weren't home, there was no message.
You were out of luck.
and you just had to keep calling that person until you got them.
And thank God they couldn't tell that you called so many times.
But you feel what I'm saying about that? I'm like, listen, sometimes you have to call. Like, they'll be like, well, I called you and I left a message and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, well, sometimes you got to call again.
Exactly. And Dr. Ragland, I hate to say it, but I go back even when there was a busy signal. When you didn't want to be, but you had to take the phone off the hook.
Here's the joke. When you talk to a Generation Z, they're like, I called this number and it made the strangest noise. It went like this. I'm like, baby, that means the line was busy. It was busy.
Exactly.
they have no
concept. And don't talk about call waiting and caller ID because none of that stuff existed. But I will tell you this, and I know we probably have about 2 minutes to go before this show's over, but I want to say it just reminds me so much. You know, what I love about the Hair Radio Morning Show, it brings us all together. And Dr. Yolanda Ragland, it is always an honor and a pleasure to welcome you here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. I want to remind everybody to go to fixyourfeet.com, find out all about Dr. Yolanda Ragland. She's doing amazing things out there, as you guys know. And so you said it. You said you're Fix Your Feet across all the social media platforms.
Pretty much. You might find Dr. Yolanda Ragland. Oh, and then, ladies, if you guys are suffering with fungal nails, I'm coming out with a new product. You can't find this anywhere on the open market. It is specifically made to get into the pores of your nails. If you're using any other antifungal product, whether it's prescription or over-the-counter, those are all designed for your skin. Your skin has larger pores, so it's harder for the medication to get into it. This medication has a vehicle that it's good for traveling across the tiny pores of the nails, and it works. So look.
Wow. Well, I have to say, fixyourfeet.com for complete details always. And, of course, through the Hair Radio Morning Show, we can connect you to everybody. So we're so excited.
Yes.
Now, tomorrow... On tomorrow's broadcast, Dr. Ragland, you have something? Yes.
One more. I'm sorry. It's Fix Your Feet Products. You'll find it on fixyourfeetproducts.com. It should be coming up
soon.
Fix Your Feet Products. Tomorrow's for
Yes, tomorrow. Thank you. That's okay. Good reminder. Lionel will be with us. You know he's friends with Oprah, Janet, and everybody else. He'll be with us live at 7:15. And, oh, hold it, tomorrow's Wednesday. I'm sorry. We've got Smooth Black coming up at 8:30 tomorrow. Sorry about that, 8:30 Eastern. And then ADP will be on to help small businesses and getting payroll done. And then on Thursday, Lionel will be with us mid-show. And then we're doing a Hairpreneur special with Linda C. out of New Jersey. And then Friday, we've got Shantae and Mike. It's a whole week of live guests that we've got a whole bunch of things. So join us from 6 to 9 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, right here for another edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're going to go ahead and close this out. If you've missed any part, go to blogtalkradio.com/hairradio to play this show back in its entirety. All my followers at Facebook, you'll be able to share this just momentarily. Dr. Ragland, thanks again for being with us. It was a great show. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's always an honor and
pleasure.
See you
back.
And I can't wait for the next time.
Absolutely. We'll see you back here very soon. All right. Thanks.